Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome the award-winning composer, flutist, and educator, Sarah Bassingthwaite. Please join us as we talk about the new CD by the London Symphony Orchestra featuring just her music, her unique and unusual creative process, and much, much more. Hey, before we begin, please hit the like, follow, and subscribe buttons, and any other button you happen to see down there. Also, leave a comment. I'm still trying to convince the algorithm that I actually know people and that they like me. Thanks. And we are welcoming to the show the wonderful composer and flutist, Sarah Bassingthwaite. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Roger. It's so great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for accepting. I appreciate it a great deal. So I just have lots of stuff I want to talk about. You're kind of a triple threat. You compose, you're a wonderful composer, you're a wonderful flutist, and you're a teacher, and I'm assuming you're pretty good at that, too. So
I love it. I do love it.
Now, you're based in Seattle?
Yes, I'm in Seattle. That's where I am right now.
Okay. And when you teach, is it college level, or is it all levels, all grades, beginning, graduate?
It's all levels. I have a private studio at home, and my youngest right now is 10 years old.
Okay.
And my oldest at home is 78.
There you go.
And I also teach at the university. And so I have undergraduate composition students mostly there, also flute.
Oh, wonderful.
So a big mix, which is really cool.
That makes the day go by, doesn't it? I know at one point I was teaching very heavily, and it just seemed like I was probably about 50% beginners and early intermediates. And the lessons just started to be all the same. You know, but it's like, okay, here we go. This is hot cross buns.
I do feel like I learn an awful lot from the students.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought I knew stuff. And then about the first time I had some little six-year-old go, why? And I'm like, well, that's just kind of why I've always done it that way. Why?
Yeah. Teachers and parents, you're like, oh, okay.
I'll get back to you next week. And exactly. So you have to go and learn new stuff just so you can explain it.
Yeah, exactly. And same with composing. I've learned a lot by having to teach composing to the students, like get organized and figure out like, yeah, what are the techniques? How do we do this?
Right. Yeah. The students will ask you some questions that you're not prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun.
It's fun.
I've been caught flat-footed on way too many occasions. And so I've said for years, and I've probably said it on this program once too many times, but I think anytime you have one person showing something to somebody else, you have two people learning.
There you go. That's nice. I haven't heard that.
That's just kind of my own personal viewpoint anyway.
Yeah, that's great.
So. First off, I have to say, as a flutist, you're a flutist, I'm not. I have, and we are both guitarists, apparently. I see your guitar in the background.
Yeah, look at us. Yeah.
And I spent almost 25 years in a duet with a flutist. So I think the guitar-flute combination is absolutely perfect. I love it. To me, it's as natural as a string quartet. I just think that those voices match each other so well.
Yeah, so, I've done that a lot, too. It is really wonderful. Also, the literature is a little different. You get more, I have a bunch of Argentinian, Serbian, you know, music from all over the world that I don't find in my other literature.
Oh, I guess I had never thought of that before. Something I take for granted.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. So I do that a lot.
So yeah, I like it a lot, and one of the things that I found that is that it has to be the right two people. I've worked with a lot of wonderful musicians, but somehow the magic isn't there. And the lady that I worked with she is still just a wonderful musician all the way around. Plus we had fun. I mean, the rehearsals were just absolutely a ball. You know, walking out on stage, I was like, hey, you guys, watch this.
Yeah.
I was never nervous when I walked out on stage with her.
And there's something about the flute and guitar, maybe because it's two people, you can be really, really sensitive.
Right. Right.
you know, and it's, so just these very, very subtle timing things that are really interesting. So, yeah.
And sitting close to her, I could tell, for example, when we were getting ready to start, because I could hear the intake of breath.
Yeah.
I could just, and I'd hear that and go, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, same thing, watching the fingers on the guitar, you're like, aha, okay.
That's where we're going, right? So
Yeah,
you've written for that combination, I believe, right?
I do. Yeah, I have.
And still do. Okay. So
Yeah.
that's wonderful. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I
From the
wrote
rest of us.
for, I have a friend, Mark Wilson, in town that I've played with for, I don't know, 25 years. And then I've got another friend who's in Mexico City, Alejandra Zamorano. And she is this fantastic guitarist. So I've written for Mark and I, but I've also written for Alejandra. And the last one is one of my favorite pieces because the middle, like the outside movements are just fun, almost dancey. Middle movement is, I actually have her detune the guitar while playing.
Oh boy.
And it's full of microtones and really just interesting sounds. And when you put flute microtones against guitar microtones, it's actually very beautiful, you know, sort of more mysterious and eerie, and less dissonant. And so that's one of my favorite pieces. I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
That sounds cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I'll have
Yeah.
to check. Has it been recorded?
Oh, yeah. So it'll be on at least on SoundCloud. I'm sure probably also on Spotify, but
Okay,
to check.
I'm going there. I'm
Sorry. Para Ale was Alejandra. So it was for Ale.
okay. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Yeah, I will definitely go after that later today. Get a chance to do that. So that's cool. And you have a new CD out. Has it just come out, I believe, right? Or is it a,
May
okay,
20.
May 20. Yeah. So that's brand new, hot off the presses.
Yeah.
Of your music recorded by the London Symphony. That's pretty cool.
Right. It just came out. It's the biggest project I've ever done. So it's called Orchestrating the Wild. And London Symphony Orchestra, two different conductors. We've got Bobby Collins and Jonathan Pasternak. And there's a concerto for double bass on there performed by Steve Shermer. And it's called Orchestrating the Wild because a lot of the pieces are inspired by nature. As you can
Okay.
maybe see behind me, I'm surrounded by nature. And so I love it. It's a huge undertaking. It's 54 minutes worth of orchestral music, which is a lot. And so it took probably 4 years,
Wow.
yeah, to put all this together. So
So
I'm really
was
excited.
this 4 years after the music was composed, or were there
No, I'm from the beginning of
total?
the
Okay.
composing.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's a big process, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, I don't think people understand just how big something like that can be.
Right.
It's pretty. It's
It's painstaking.
a big undertaking. I was actually listening to the first movement of the concerto for double bass. I thought it was absolutely lovely, and so I have a friend of mine actually at church who's a double bass player. So I immediately sent him the Spotify link. Says, check this out. I think
Oh.
Spotify or YouTube, I don't remember now, but anyway, I said, you got to check this out because I know he would like that a lot. So,
So what do are you able to tell me what you liked about it? Because there's something I was thinking about that movement exactly.
the beginning startled me because with the lightness of the harp and the gentleness of the bass, because the bass can be kind of a brute, right? And so I just thought that, I have a couple of friends of mine who have a duo, professional duo, and they it's flute and bass, double bass, right? They both have their DMAs, and so I mean they're both very, very, very good at this. And when you see the combination on paper, you kind of go, but then when you hear it, you go, oh yeah, that works nice, that was the first thing that crossed my mind was my friends when I was listening to the harp and the bass. But the rest of it, I don't know that I was listening to it with that kind of, I wasn't trying to analyze it that much. I was just kind of sitting back and letting it hit me, which is usually my first, that's usually my first response. Is just instead of sitting back and trying to pick at it, I just want to listen to it and get the whole picture. And
Yeah.
so,
Yeah.
but I did enjoy it very much. I listened to the entire first movement. I haven't listened to any more yet, but I will. One of the things that I like about your music is that it's accessible. A lot of contemporary composers write very well, and I enjoy their music, but you have to learn how to listen to it. And that's not the case with your music. Your music is just very, very accessible to somebody who doesn't follow, music the way you and I would, for example. My wife would be a good example of that, where she would enjoy something like this. And she's not a musician, doesn't care to be a musician, and doesn't even want to talk about it. She just knows what she likes. I know what I like. How many times have you heard that phrase? But yeah, this is the kind of music that is very, very, very good. I mean, for the professional, you've got a lot to listen to, but to the non-professional, there's a lot to enjoy as well.
Great. Well, I was thinking about that. I've been talking to people over the past couple of weeks since the release and asking their impressions. And a lot of them are non-musicians. And I'm hearing words like immersive, cinematic, expressive.
I actually have the word cinematic written on my
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
I'm reluctant to use that because it can be done in a pejorative way, but honestly, in my mind, I'm thinking it does what it's supposed to do. It provides images. And images that are at once familiar and at the same time new.
Yeah, I think, and a lot of people do think in imagery. And so I have this way of thinking about it, which is, we have things that we want to express. We have, it could be emotions like sadness or joy or that kind of thing, or it could even be just movements like jumping or flying or any of those. And that maybe cinema or poetry or dance, they're ways of expressing these things, and music is also a way. And so I see it almost more like there's the core of our experience, and then it can be expressed in these different possible ways, and music's just one of them. And so if I guess I theorize that if people are having a visual experience, it probably is because it goes right through that core of experience and pops out in a way that's familiar for them.
That sounds right to me. I don't think I'd thought of it in those terms, that all makes sense. Well, that's one of the reasons why I enjoy talking to musicians because and artists in general, because there's a perspective there that, it just reminds me I don't know much.
Well, and I got this. I started thinking about this years ago when I collaborated with an oil painter, and my first instinct was, I'm going to compose what his paintings are about. And I just was struggling and struggling, and I finally was like, no, that's not it. You need to go to the core of what he was trying to express. Why did he come up with those colors and those lines and all of that? And that's where you meet. That's the common ground between the two arts. It isn't the subject of the painting. It's the actual, the colors and the textures and all of that. That's the meeting ground. And
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was part of a one-off project many, many years ago. My cousin, who's passed on now, was an award-winning poet, and taught poetry and well, taught literature in general, and probably a few other college classes when she was teaching, that she didn't want to. But she put together a program. It was a two-night program, and it was live on stage. It was myself on the guitar, a poet, and a painter. And so the poet would be reading from her book of poetry, not my cousin, different somebody else that she knew. I would play as I was moved to play to that poetry, either pieces that I knew, or sometimes I just improvised through things, or I would pieces that I knew and I would improvise around them and that kind of stuff. And then a painter would paint impressions based on those two things. And so we did that 2 nights, and we all had stuff to sell in the lobby afterwards. People were, and it was a very interesting thing. It was exhausting. It was a, that was a, we did it for 2 hours, and I was like,
That's a lot. Yeah. But I think that does sort of tap into what I'm thinking of is you have to figure out like what is it about the poetry that I'm responding to, and what is it about the music that the painter's responding to? You have to get pretty deep in there.
I totally agree. I totally agree. So,
Very interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
and on that, I kind of want to take a side, well, not a sidestep, but talk about your process for composing and how you do that. You were kind enough to send me a sample of how you sketch something prior to composing it, and I found that absolutely fascinating because you have all of these colors written out all over the pages. So my first question is that an organizational tool only, or do you have chromathesia, where you actually see music in colors?
I don't have that. Yeah, I have basically when I'm beginning to compose a piece, I have three main tools that I use. One is that I sent you that I'll describe in a minute. I call it a timeline, for lack of a better word, a brain dump, and then just my voice memo app on my phone. And so if I know what instruments I'm composing for, we'll say orchestra, then I might in this brain dump just think of all the possible cool things that an orchestra could do that I want to make sure to include. And I'll just and sometimes the file will be 20 pages long of just thoughts. And so I want to collect those, like what are all the cool things the strings can do? What are, all that. And then that'll get more refined as I think more. And then the timeline, which to me is really fun. Like if I'm going to do, let's say, a 10-minute long piece, I'll just write a line and I'll write 0 on one side and 10 on the other. And I'll start sketching out basic like textures, dynamics, that kind of thing in a graphic form. And so it's just, and I use my iPad. And so I've got all the options of all the colors and I can just like, do lots of little dots if I want some, articulated passage. I might do waves for something that's, more swells, that kind of thing. And then you can see things that are larger if I want it to be louder, that kind of thing. And it's actually really nice because then I can just look at it as an object, almost like a piece of art, and like, does that make sense? Does that look like it's got a good form that, follows? And it's super interesting. And then the next step of it, the voice memos is for when I go out for walks. And I'm like, aha,
Because you never know when they're going to hit.
No, and it's going to be when you're not at home. For sure. So it's just like, yeah, I depend on that. And then I'll, go add the voice memos to the brain dump. So that, now the brain dump's growing. And then I'll go to the brain dump and figure out where that particular idea might go on the timeline. And so some of these things get so elaborate after a while, I actually have to number them. So on this brain dump set of pages, I might have idea number 72 is going to go here on the timeline, and I'll just put a 72, and then I can fit in all of the ideas and figure out how they're connected to each other, and it's just this really fun process that keeps it's a, like a holding place for all the ideas because composing is very hard. And for me, and if I don't have some way of organizing, I will definitely forget, for sure. So this is just like I can hold all these ideas, and eventually I can get them out there. And the colors do help because you can sort of see, do I have clarity of idea, and does it organically grow into this other idea, And anyway, just it helps me a lot. But they're fun when I go back and look at these. Timelines that I've made for the pieces. I'm like, this is so crazy. It's so interesting.
Well, you sent that to me for Kate Flattery, your piece Kate Flattery, and so I was looking at that while I was listening to the piece, and I'm lost. And I'm going,
Like, wait.
do I not get it? I mean, what's going on? But now that you explain what's going on here, I said, oh, okay, now I understand it because yeah, that makes a great deal of sense now.
Right. It's not intended to be for public consumption,
Of course.
but But yeah, just that the process, I think the process of composing is, inherently challenging. And so if you don't have a way to do this, and that's my way, and every composer's different,
I was
for
going to
sure.
say, anybody who is creative at all, they have their own way of getting from point A to point B, and so it's difficult. For me, I found it difficult to explain to my students that your way is okay. It doesn't have to be like my way. You know, it's it. You know, it's take from me what you can get, but at the same time, you know, throw away the stuff that doesn't work for you. You know, just find your own way and kind of fuss about when they're like 12, 13, 14 years old, they're terrified of making a mistake. I'm going, oh no,
Just go.
you gotta wallow in those mistakes.
And I haven't, I or for a long time, I hadn't met any composer who did it any way like this at all. And then I came upon John Corigliano, and he's like, "Here's my timeline." I'm like, "Oh, that's so great! Somebody else does it like this." But that's the only person.
And I think it's so important because I don't think people realize with instrumental music that it's still a form of storytelling. And so it's kind of important to keep your story moving in the right way. And so good storytelling has certain components. You know, it doesn't
Sense of
just mean
direction,
a
right?
direction you know, you have little well, you have little climaxes, little moments, you know, and things like that. And we need that in the music as well. And so yeah, that's the other part I would explain to my students always. You know, it's like get a story in your head when you're playing instrumental music. You know, it should be about something. You know, and it doesn't have to be about the same thing every day. It could be about your dog today, and it could be about your dog today, and could be about a piece of homework that you hate tomorrow. I mean, it could be any number of things. So it's all good. So I can see how in the form of or in the way of storytelling, that the way you do that kind of helps keep you on task, keeps you.
I mean, basically, I think it comes down to express something,
Sure.
and you can decide what that's going to be, but let there be something that you're expressing.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now you're, and I, you had mentioned like the Mountain Symphony. You're kind of a outdoorsy person. And you are going on something called Residency Adventures here pretty soon. Did I read that right?
I'm heading to Svalbard, which is almost at the top of the world. It's way above the Arctic Circle, and I'll be on a tall boat for 3 weeks, doing a resident composing residency there. So that's going to be in about a month, something like that. I'm really
How
excited.
did that come about? That's just exciting as can be
Yeah,
to me.
they put this together. So that's going to be a bunch of us artists on board, all collaborating. There's going to be a climate awareness aspect to this. But yeah, just a bunch of people like who want to experience the far, far north. We're going to be in a place where the only time we can get off the boat is if we're with a person with a large gun, because there are polar bears everywhere.
Oh.
So you're not allowed to actually get onto the land unless you're protected. So this will be an adventure, but it's kind of cool to be, and residencies are awesome. So thank you to everybody who creates residencies, because the ability to focus on your work is amazing. Just not to have any other concerns. You don't have to answer emails. You don't have to, go shopping, whatever. It's pretty amazing. So I'm looking forward to being on the boat where this is going to be very, very focused and be able to, I'm going, my, the plan is to create two projects out of it. One is a Svalbard Symphony. I don't know if it'll be called that, but it'll be a symphony based on this experience. And another one is a collection of, well, an electronics piece. I do electronics as well, or electroacoustic. And I'm gonna record a lot of sounds when I'm there. So it might be sounds of the water or of ice, or if I'm lucky, a polar bear. And maybe also the captain of the boat or whoever else would like to participate, and then put these together into an electronics piece.
Oh, that'll be very cool. So now,
Interesting.
do you like sample this and then play the samples, or is it just the raw sounds edited together, or how does that work?
I guess I'll find out. But raw sounds, I would process them, so bring them into Ableton maybe or some other program like that, and then you process them and you make them into music the same as you would anything else.
Gotcha.
So I had, when I was doing my doctorate, I specialized in electroacoustic music, and I learned a lot about composing using computers. And it's music in the same way. Like, there's still texture and color and all of the same elements that we have if it's an instrument. And I approach composing electronic pieces the same way. Is, does it have a sense of forward motion? Is it expressive? Is it interesting to listen to? Are the colors beautiful? You know, so all the same questions, and hopefully create an effective piece of music. It just is a different instrument, is really all it is.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I that's not something that I've dabbled in. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm, as a guitar player, I know a lot of people who do pop music and things like that. So I'm painfully aware of all the things that they can do in the studio. But that said, that's not something that I have any hands-on experience with. So.
Right, right. And this is a little bit of a different genre than
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more about the components of the sound itself.
Okay.
You know, I guess it could be sampling, but it's not really like synthesizing.
Right.
You know, yeah.
I get
so a different thing. But in any case, yeah, I'm really excited about that. We'll see. I've got all my warm clothes, you know, ready to go.
and hopefully they're warm enough. So.
Hopefully. Yeah, we will find out. I'll check in with you afterwards and see if I packed right.
That's funny. So you're having a heck of a year so far in 2025, as we sit here. You've already won some awards, or at least one award. And now you've got, since the first of the year, three different premieres of different pieces.
Yeah, that's at least that. That's right. I should have prepared before talking to you. So I won, I think, four awards.
Okay.
This year, which was... it's just a lucky year, you know. I'll take it because I know it's not going to happen all the time. And it's just another one today, the Cooper Ann International Music Competition.
Congratulations.
Three different categories for that. So that's wonderful. It's very nice.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, some premieres also. And the most recent one was a piece called Iridium for two flutes and electronics.
Okay.
And so, speaking of the electronics, and so that one was really interesting. Just a really wild piece. And that one should be up on Spotify and all that. And so if we put that next to something like maybe Cape Flattery or the Mountain Symphony, which is one of the old, it is the oldest piece on the album. It's from 2012. And just to see the difference, I think this is kind of interesting to see how my composing has changed from 2012 until now.
Oh.
And I was thinking about this a lot because what I see, and it reflects my outlook on life, is that it's in 2012, it was very clear, forms were clear, kind of light and airy, I would almost say, and melodies that you could follow, and yeah. And then over the years, it gets a little bit more dense, and the harmonies become, you know, 4-note chords, 5-note chords, 7-note chords. I have one that's like 10-note chords, you know, and these just very, very rich. And I'm not talking about dissonant so much as rich, and rhythms that obscure each other so that it's more of a wash of sound. Whereas, you know, 12 years ago, it was more crystal clear, you know. And I was thinking about, like, well, why am I attracted to that sound now? And then I realized that is how I feel more and more about life, is that life is messy and it's beautiful, and I accept it all and enjoy it all more and more as I get older. And I'm not trying to put everything in its little categories of just absorb.
I you talk about being in nature, and I think of I get out in there, and it's just this glorious chaos of trees and bugs and flowers, and you know, I really, you know, I love gardens, but I prefer the forest and the randomness. I find that beautiful. So I find that in the music and the art as well, that once you kind of let go of trying to pigeonhole everything, it's just much easier to enjoy. So are you still performing?
Yeah. In fact, I performed Iridium, the one I was just mentioning, the two flutes and electronics. But it is hard to have time for everything.
That was going to be my next question. I said, when do you sleep?
It's definitely challenging. But you also, I think performing informs composing and vice versa. So when I compose, I'm thinking about precisely what the performer's going to do. You know, right. How is the percussionist going to put down the triangle beater and pick up the vibraphone mallets and walk over to the vibraphone and do, you know, you think about all of the things like, and it's fun. It makes it a little bit more alive, as it's not just notes on a page at all. It's like, right. No, those are people that are going to play that. And are they going to enjoy playing it? You know, are they going to feel expressive? And music is definitely collaborative.
Yes.
And that's, you know, this incredible, just a gift that we get. That we get to work with each other on this. So I love playing. I premiere a lot of pieces. I love that. And finding what talking to the composer or just trying to figure out what they're trying to express and really do that. And then when I'm composing, same thing. I'm going to hand this to somebody. Did I write it in a way that they can relate to and understand and bring the most out of it? You know, so, it's just a cool collaboration.
So do you tour at all, or are you just performing local? I say just, are you performing locally, or do you tour?
I mostly just play locally. I did just perform at the Electronic Music Midwest Festival in Kansas City. That was fun.
Yeah.
Really cool pieces that some of these younger composers, I've had a lot of experience with younger composers also. I just ran a young composers competition.
Oh.
And we had 157 different composers from all over the world. It was like 22 different countries send their pieces. And so I got to listen to all these pieces. And the music that's being composed is stunning. I'm really have great optimism and hope for the future of composition, because these young people are doing amazing composing.
I had a guest on the show, and I've forgotten his name. I hope he'll forgive me. But this is a little over a year ago, and he's composes electronic music. Mm-hmm. And he's from Caracas, Venezuela. So I was a little concerned about him because of the political conditions right now, but he does EDM, because he's got to make a living, got to put Wheaties in his bowl. Mm-hmm. and he also does video game music, which I thought was it's just, as an oldster, these are things that I don't think about. I don't think of these venues, you know, and talking to this young fellow who's about 27, 28 years old, who's you know, supporting himself doing that. And I'm thinking, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it, so my composition students at the university, I would say none of them are on a regular classical music trajectory. Uh-huh. They're planning on composing for video games, movie soundtracks, songwriting, you know, venues. So composing is very different from when I was in my undergrad. Very, very different. Mm-hmm. And the things that are valued and the goals that people have are completely, like, unrecognizable. Which I think is really interesting. And that's one reason I say I'm learning a lot from them, because they're asking me, well, how do I compose using, you know, extremely dense jazz chords? I'm like, well, let's find out, you know, and just this mix of genres that I wasn't exposed to.
Yeah, I remember talking to friends of mine who, I never studied formally, so I'm just a mutt. But friends of mine who were studying formally back in the day, and I noticed that there was a very, very, very strong academic bias towards a lot of stuff, and I just couldn't abide by that. That was the reason I didn't go, because, you know, if it had a melody, it was wrong.
Right.
You know, if there's, you know, there's, and And so, yeah, they would just make sure that you didn't have a melody and find the most obscure things.
That sounds like mine.
And that's what it was for a long time. And I think people had to kind of break out of that and do different things. I marvel at somebody like Nadia Boulanger, who just basically, from all accounts, and I wish I could have met her, but by all accounts, basically they would spend 2 years taking Bach music, tear it apart, and put it back together again, and look at all the choices that he made in the process. I think it was Philip Glass that said that, you know, working with her, he says, just fundamentally changes the way you think about music. And then you look at the people, Quincy Jones studied with her, and Philip Glass studied with her, and Massenet, and all these different people studied with her. And there's no way you could say, oh, there's that Boulanger touch. I mean, she just was able to pull out the best of each person. And,
fascinating.
And so, right, yeah. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
I find that to be a far better way of teaching, because now you're helping people be honestly creative. They're not mechanically creating, but.
And find out how they can express what they want to express. You're trying to help them find the tools. So I found out, this is interesting, is recently I found out that my uncle, who I never met, who was a Canadian composer, studied with Nadia Boulanger.
Oh, my.
And it wasn't until after he had passed that somebody said, oh, by the way, your uncle was a, you know, well-known composer. I'm like, why didn't
I'm just finding out about this now.
I would have loved to talk to him.
Yeah,
so he had studied with her also. And yeah, she sounds amazing. And I think that if we can do that, if we can, I guess I feel like I'm getting better at this, is break down music or any art into its smallest components.
Mm-hmm.
And you can build it back up your way.
Right, right.
And
yeah,
that's
Legos.
What I hope to teach my students. And I hope, I feel like I'm getting better at discovering for myself as well.
I think you probably are. Believe it or not, we are all out of time. And I'm going to have to say goodbye now. And,
yeah, well, that whizzed by.
It does, doesn't it? I'm always amazed by how quickly this time goes. And so I want to really spend just a moment and tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. It means a lot to me. And,
and likewise. Thank you so much for this great conversation.
Wonderful. So until next time, and I hope that won't be too long from now, we'll meet again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roger. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye. I want to thank Sarah Bassingthwaite for taking the time from her very busy schedule to chat with me. And as always, I'd like to thank you too for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Hey, you know, I'm really trying to grow this little boutique podcast, so if you have any suggestions, please let me know. And invite your friends to check out more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.